Yeah, peace and blessings, love and service. I want to thank you all, listening audience, everyone chiming in. Definitely want to thank my supporters, Restorative Justice, NERC, which is Northside Residents Redevelopment Council, SEIU, Local 26, the Union, Nonviolent Peace Force, and BWWA for supporting this podcast, which is the 3D Restorative Solutions Podcast. You know, and had a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Mel Duncan, and I record the conversation. I just want to segue, first of all, to thank all the listening audiences for chiming in, my supporters, and I really want to get right down into this conversation with Mel, so I segue over to that, and thank you again. So yeah, this will be the part two, right? Yeah, when you were saying that, I don't know, you know, I'm kind of in the, I've always been in the movies, like Avatar, right? Really comes, you know, when you say the connection to the trees and how we, you know, have, how we know that we have, when we're conscious, we have this connection to everything around us, right? And how we show up or how we present our, or how we even treat everything around us has a rippling effect. Right, because it's not just about the now, right? But chopping down those trees now can mean, well, you know, somebody won't have shade later on, right? Or, you know what I'm saying? It's an ecosystem there, right? Like you said, there's a communication. And I think that, you know, the more we kind of tap into a better way of showing up as individuals, as people, as human beings, right? When we're able to see that we have the ability to, you know, like I shared with some of my guys, just because you woke up and stubbed your toe don't mean you got to have a bad day. You're in control of that. Yes. And we say, oh, I stubbed my toe, man, my whole day went bad. Well, at what part did you stop? Right, and go back and say, my day doesn't have to be bad. Even though it looks like it may be going bad, I still have the ability to take control over what I have control over, and the day will bring me what the day will bring me. Right? It's how we respond to things, but knowing that when we're dealing with how we're seeing now, a lot of people who haven't actually quite dealt with some harm that's been done to them. You know, hurt people hurt people.
That's right.
Right? And it's easier to share my pain than to address my pain. Right? When I don't have the tools. I have the tools to share, but the tools to address are a whole different, you know, they come from different places in their investments, right? And making certain changes. So with the restorative model and the restorative practices, you know, it's one of my duties to kind of show people that there's a difference between restorative justice and the restorative practices. Because the restorative practices are age old. They didn't just start in the 70s. Restorative justice may have been coined for the 70s based on that particular probation officer's credit, right? You know, we don't want to take credit away from nobody. But the practice of restoring value and repairing harm is, like you say, as old as the hills. And we talk about nonviolent peace forces, movements, thought processes, ideologies, tools, and practices. Being that it is nothing new, I think that having these conversations will open up different avenues for individuals to also have the conversations, right? I myself see the value in exposing people to alternative solutions in these days and times. I was just looking at the statement, the stakes are too high to take sides. And when we're taking sides with the bad of history and trying to repeat that unconsciously, without looking at other options that are more in tune with, you know, our center, what we really want as a community. Just based in North Minneapolis, and that's where I reside. I was born, but I wasn't raised here. You know, it has always been about one community. No matter what family you was from, my grandmother moved here in 1946. So she's one of the, you know, our Nun family is one of the original older black families here. But there was a map that came out in 1935, right, that had people identified by certain classes living in certain areas. They upgraded in 45 in a couple more years. Here it is, 2020. If you look at that same map, there is no wonder why certain areas are treated the way that they are.
That's right. And there, it's by design.
It's by design. It's not a happenstance. Yeah. It's not a coinkydink, right?
Yeah.
But I also believe that systems that institutionalize that mindset of segregation and things like that are made up of people. They're made up of individuals. They're made up of human beings, no matter, you know, what race they may be, how they identify themselves. They're still human beings, right? And it is the people that either consciously or unconsciously support systems that cause those divisions. It's the people that actually support these systems that check off boxes but never actually repair the harm. Because if we notice, a lot of institutions are designed as a means of repairing something. The medical institution.
Yeah.
Right? Even, well, we know that the police started out returning property, but now they are...
No, they started out returning slaves.
Yeah, that's property, right?
Yeah. Okay.
They was the property, return the property. Yeah. And then
and
somewhere...
also keeping the Native Americans in check.
Right? So now, I guess they have a different mission, but the root is still what it is. And there are certain ideologies and mindset that knows about those roots and do not want to pull those roots up. Because pulling those roots up means that we acknowledge that this tree is it's in a bad place. It's serving a bad purpose. The ideology of how the police operate is not based on restoring harm. Right? So.
That's right.
And I think having a conversation about, and that's one thing I'm emphasizing and getting the individuals to the table that can add value to why it is so important not only to repair harm and restore harm done, but also take on a nonviolent energy, which is based in love for humanity, right? So that our future is not more of the same of the past.
And I want to share a little bit more about the past, because when you brought up about how the police started in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mel, give me a second. I'm going to let you keep talking. I got to go grab my charger for my computer because my low battery light just came on, and I do not want to lose any of this.
Okay.
Okay, so you can just keep talking because it's being recorded. I'm just finna turn my video off for a second.
Okay. All right. My family came from Scotland. My name's Duncan. We were uprooted during the clearing of the Highlands by the English. And my brother and I, in studying our genealogy, now have determined that our second generation here on this continent and our third generation on this continent had, next to the census record, listed his occupation, patroller. That meant they were chasing runaway slaves. That's how my family made their living in the mid-1700s. And by 1830, they had made their way to Illinois, and they were given land by the government. They were given land that was owned by the Sac Fox Indians. And so when people say, oh, we all make it on our own, sure, personal initiative plays a part, but my family enjoyed privilege from the day that they set foot on this continent, and they gained wealth off of the enslavement and stealing from others. And I think that we have to be very clear that the wealth and the privilege of white people in this country just didn't arise magically. You know, my family made money chasing slaves as patrollers, and my family had farmland in Illinois that had been taken from the Sac Fox Indians. And so as we look at defining what the true story is, there has to be some accountability. There has to be some kind of restitution,
right,
of understanding. I mean, we're all here together now, but we got here very differently.
Right.
And so we really have to have deep and honest conversations with each other. And understand that my privilege was at the expense of a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And we can change that.
And that's a hard conversation, because in that conversation, I think the difficulty comes in when individuals feel like they have to take accountability for their forefathers' actions, right? And, you know, a lot of the, like you said, a lot of the privileges that have come along with that, you know, some of them are kind of nice. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like human nature. You don't want to give up something nice that, you know, was...
In St. Paul, I'm sitting here on Ojibwe land right now. You know, it was their land.
Right.
And I think that we have to continue to push ourselves on how we meaningfully address that if we're going to be a whole people.
And that's that repairing the harm that was done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To the people, whether it was by the sitting government or the former government or policies, legislation, you know, actions taken that was sanctioned and approved. Right? And I think that only getting to the core of humanity, getting to the values of individuals, I think that that's one of the solutions. And that's, you know, with the 3D Restorative Podcast and the whole, you know, concept of bringing the restorative mindset, right, to individuals, you know, communities, and even systems,
yes,
right? And not just, yeah, bottom line checking boxes and bottom line that total amount of income and revenue, right?
Manu, you were so right that people are the make systems, and people can change systems.
Yeah.
They're not just imposed on us from outer space.
They're not clouds in the sky. Right.
And so we can change them.
Yes. Yes, we can. I mean, that's what was so appealing to me about nonviolent peace force when I first heard it and then went through the training, and I'm hearing all the rhetoric and conversation about, you know, how people feel about, you know, the economic status or existence of the current police. But the conditions didn't just start, and, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to just that, because you have the,
yes,
union, which is not saying anything, Right. So, and I'm, you know, so it's a whole lot of roads I don't want to go down. Right. But in the essence, all of these systems are occupied, ran, supported, you know, advocated for by individuals, by people. There's no generated, there's no computer generated anything that we respond to and follow that wasn't first put forth by a human being and said that this is what we want to.
You know, my godson, Kevin Solberg, is a student in the geography department at the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And as a project, they went through every deed for every home in Minneapolis going back to like 1910.
Right.
And then they plotted which of those deeds had restrictive covenants. And then they mapped it. And you can see, you know, where the wealth is and where those restrictive covenants that, that, you know, you can't sell to a black and you can't sell to a Jew. And it's that clear. It's in black and white on those. And that's all system. That was all decided.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the ways that people, at least in this country, have wealth is in their house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the way most of us have wealth. If we have wealth.
Yep.
You know, it's not stock market or whatever. And if you're deprived of even being able to buy a house by design.
By design.
Then we start to see how some of these other issues come into focus.
And that's, so that kind of goes to a segue, because in the work that the conversation that I've been having with a lot of the Block Club leaders that still exist in North Minneapolis, and you know, I kind of play around with the questions that expose personal biases, because we all have them.
Yeah,
but,
we do.
But with the Block Clubs and having that conversation, most of the Block Club leaders are homeowners. Right? They are homeowners. Right?
Yep. Yep.
I am yet to run into one that has stated that they have rented 10, 15 years out of their home. That don't happen. Right? So it's the so they have a sense in coming and existing and showing up from a place of ownership. Right? Whether it was inherited, they worked for it or whatever. They see through the eyes of ownership. Right? And you know, with ownership comes accountability, responsibility, and those things, right? They're values that come with it. But when, and all of them said, when someone moves into one of the houses that they know are renter houses, and the owner probably lives in New York or Oregon or somewhere, they've all said that they see a difference in lifestyle. Just how they show up, how they engage, you know, even if they, you know, how they take care of their yard, you know, how they, you know, the upkeep of the house, the coming and going, it's different. And I was talking to this one black guy, and I said, well, I know that there's a lot of renter houses over here, but there's also a lot of empty lots, and a lot of the renter houses, the people who own them are just trying to get them out to families, so they may take, you know, like Section 8 vouchers or something like that, because I have a sister, she does an agency, rental agency, and a lot of their houses are in North Minneapolis, so a lot of the people that they rent to are on Section 8 public support or something like that to help them, you know, actually occupy the homes. So the conversation was really kind of showing, and I kind of showed her how, you know, if you have a family who never really had ownership, or maybe stayed in the projects, you know, came from another state, just moving in, trying to settle in, they come with their own culture that they bring in their household, how they do what they do, how they show up, what their values are. not knowing what the values of the community, the block, the community that they just coming to live somewhere, right?
Go ahead. Well, and if they're coming to live somewhere, they're probably also poor, having trouble making it to the end of the month, having trouble, especially now, keeping their kids engaged with school while they have to go and work, you know, a couple of jobs. Maybe the lawn isn't kept up, but that's because, you know, mom's working 14 hours a day and then taking care of kids who are supposed to be watching their computer, which they may not have, or their internet, which they don't have, to stay in school.
And if there's no father in the house, guess what? It's going to be a lack. It's going to be LOD. Might be some lack of discipline. Not to say that just because the father's not in the house, that is, because mothers do a excellent job, right? All singles parents have doing, you know, they do the best they can. They do the best they can, but coming from a place of ownership and having a certain bias, you tend to look at that family different. Mm-hmm. You tend to not really want to engage because they may do some things that you may not understand or really approve of, right? Because you know that they supposed to cut their grass. Where they got a house, they live in the house, they should have a lawnmower, right? Right? So, but it's, and I went through a training a few years ago. I think it was with Isaiah and leadership, and we was talking about dealing with community issues, and the scenario was there was a church with a house next to it, and the church moved in, but then people moved into the house, people selling dope out of the house. So the scenario was, as a church, what do we do? And I know that this is a scenario that I have knowledge of, so I let them deal with, you know, coming up with the result. But what they never said was, let's go over and talk to somebody over there. They came up with all different boxes and systems that they believe would be supportive of their culture, but instead of as church members, instead of engaging as human beings, they overstepped, they missed that mark. They called the police, they did this, that, and the other. And I asked, I said, well, did anybody go talk to them?
Yeah.
And then they stopped. So in this time,
What that reminds me of is you and I were part of the teams that provided protection at the polls on election day. And I was standing at a couple polls in South Minneapolis where they turned it into a party. You know, there were food trucks. There was music. You know, one at MLK Park on Nicollet, it was after dark and I was standing there and we got on our signal channel that there were Trump cars coming, our trucks coming our way. Well, by that time there were 30, 40 people and they were handing out food and, you know, singing. Well, that Trump truck didn't even slow down. It just kept right on going. And what that reminded me of is whether it's South Sudan or South Minneapolis, the foundation of real security is an engaged community.
Indeed.
And that is the truth everywhere I've been.
I do believe. So with that being said, because we do believe that we have the ability to get our community engaged, get individuals, empower individuals who are influential to influence other people to get engaged, to network and form relationships, better, healthier relationships, relationships that are, you know, aligned with our values, what we really want, right?
Yeah.
So I guess I want to wrap it up here, and I guess I just want to leave it open. If you have any you know, last wise words or wisdoms that you would like to share with the listening audience? And again, I want to thank you for your time, because time is something that we can never get back. Time is something that if we invest good into our time, that we'll render, you know, good results in the future, not only in our own future, but the future of, you know, the people that's coming behind us. So if you can leave some kind wise words of wisdom, Brother Mel Duncan.
Well, as I listened to what you just said, Manu, what I thought about was we have everything that we need to have a culture of peace, nonviolence, and plenty for everyone. It is in the here and the now and in us. And we can do this. It won't be easy. There certainly will be forces that don't want that to happen. But if we continue to show up and stand up and to choose to be brave, we can create this new story that you're such a part of. So thank you for allowing me to be with you for this time.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. And